Thank you for joining us to learn more about the use of sunscreens to prevent skin cancer and photoaging. With us today is Dr. Elizabeth Hale, Clinical Associate Professor at the New York University Medical Center in New York City. Dr. Hale, sunscreens are an important first step in protecting against skin cancer and premature aging. What do physicians need to know about sunscreen ingredients to ensure their patients have optimal protection? And what are the new guidelines from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration?
This is a very important topic that comes up every single day in my practice. I practice dermatology in New York City, and my training included specialized training in skin cancer surgery or Mohs surgery. So while my specific area of interest is in the detection and treatment of skin cancer, I also spend about 50% of my time treating the cosmetic signs of photoaging or sun damage. So we're realizing increasingly more and more just how powerful the ultraviolet rays are and the types of effects they can have on the skin. And of course, we know that in the United States right now, skin cancer is the single most common type of cancer. So skin cancer is more common than breast cancer, colon cancer, lung cancer, all combined. That's how common it is. So this is really an epidemic, and it's also a type of cancer where we can really affect the incidence rates if we can really heighten awareness about the importance of sun protection, about the safety of sunscreen ingredients, and about how important it is to get in the habit of using sunscreen every single day. Because we know that about 90% of skin cancers are somehow attributed to ultraviolet damage. And what some people don't realize is that up to 90% of the signs of premature aging of the skin are also caused by sun damage. So we can really make a great difference in our patients' lives by accurately counseling them to wear a good sunscreen, a broad-spectrum sunscreen, every single day, because this can directly impact their incidence of skin cancer and have a positive influence on their development of premature aging. As far as sunscreens go, there are two main types of sunscreens. There are inorganic and organic sunscreens, and it's important for people to understand the difference. Inorganic sunscreens are oftentimes referred to as physical blockers, and the ones that are most commonly used are zinc oxide and titanium dioxide. These generally form a protective layer on the top of the skin and really try to prevent the ultraviolet rays from getting through and penetrating into the skin. On the other hand, organic ultraviolet filters are also known as chemical sunscreens. These are the ones that have raised a lot of questions in the media and among the public now about the questionable safety of their ingredients. I will start by saying that my colleagues at the Skin Cancer Foundation and through the American Academy of Dermatology, we have done a lot of research, and we do think that these chemical sunscreens are safe, and I'll touch on this again later. But it's important to understand the difference because some groups have raised some questions about the safety of some of these organic or chemical ingredients in the ultraviolet filters or sunscreens. And while I'm hoping to convince you that they are still safe to use, if there is a question or if a patient simply doesn't feel comfortable using any type of chemical sunscreen, I do highly recommend the inorganic or physical blockers. I think zinc oxide is one of the best sunscreen ingredients because it does block broad spectrum, so through both the ultraviolet A and the ultraviolet B wavelengths, and I'll touch on that as well. But, I always feel good about recommending zinc oxide. And furthermore, more recently, some of these particles have been micronized so that the particles are smaller so that they don't give that telltale white appearance to the skin that a lot of people try to avoid. So I think you can get a good physical and or a chemical sunscreen, and there are plenty of them available. So before we talk about the new rulings by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration on sunscreen, there have been, some new rules that have very recently been brought into the public eye, and they will start to take effect later this year. But before we talk about that, I wanted to talk about the impact of sunscreen use on the development of skin cancer and also the importance of daily sunscreen application. So first and foremost, we know that sun damage definitely contributes to the formation of free radicals and reactive oxygen species, which can cause mutations in the skin that directly lead to carcinogenesis. So we've known from some time that ultraviolet rays have the ability to contribute to skin cancer. They also serve as immunosuppression agents, so they also, suppress our body's ability to fight cancers and to fight viruses and other such things. So we know that there's so much importance to protecting ourselves from the sun because it can cause immunosuppression, photocarcinogenesis, and also photoaging. And oftentimes I'll tell my patients, you know, we've known for so long that the sun and overexposure to the sun can cause these damaging mutations that lead to skin cancer formation. But increasingly, people are very interested in the effect that overexposure to the sun has on photoaging, because the truth is people are vain, and they, you know, they sometimes take the approach, if I get a skin cancer, you will cure it, which hopefully is usually the case. But what they don't realize is that all of the things that they're coming in for more on a cosmetic level, like the sunspots, the uneven texture, the fine lines, the wrinkles, so many of those things can be avoided by using a daily broad-spectrum sunscreen. So I really try to tell patients it's really twofold here. We're trying to prevent you from getting skin cancer, which, as I mentioned, is the most common cancer diagnosed in the United States, but also trying to minimize their signs of premature aging, which is a huge industry right now. And between all of the technology, the lasers, the injectables, the fillers, people are coming in spending millions of dollars a day in this country to get rid of signs of sun damage. And the most important first step is to use a broad spectrum sunscreen every single day to try to minimize these effects and these signs of premature aging. As far as skin cancer goes, as I mentioned, skin cancer is the most common cancer diagnosed in the United States. And the most common type of skin cancer is basal cell carcinoma, which represents about 80% of new cases of skin cancer. The second most common is squamous cell carcinoma. And the third most common, although the most serious because it has the highest mortality, is melanoma. And melanoma only represents about 4% of new cases of skin cancer, according to the Skin Cancer Foundation, but it does account for about 75% of deaths related to skin cancer. So although it is a smaller incident number, the number of deaths relating from melanoma is higher, much higher than that of the non-melanoma skin cancers. We know that the sun has a great impact on all three types of these skin cancers, but I wanted to just make a couple points which I think are really important. Number one, squamous cell carcinoma is the type of cancer that is most commonly related to chronic sun exposure. So we see squamous cell carcinomas on sun-exposed areas. They increase in incidence as patients get older, so there's been more cumulative time in the sun, and they're very common in people that spend a lot of time outdoors, occurring on the scalp, the back of the ears, the back of the hands. Melanoma is the most serious type of skin cancer, and we also think that ultraviolet radiation plays a role in melanoma. But what's very interesting is that people often get melanomas on parts of their body that may be covered most of the time and then exposed to intense bursts of sun exposure, either in the form of a sunburn or, unfortunately, in artificial tanning beds, which we know is a huge problem in this country because so many of our youngsters, adolescents, and young women especially are frequenting tanning salons, and there have been efforts to outlaw the use of tanning salons, especially in minors in this country. But we have seen a direct rise in the incidence of melanoma that parallels that with the explosion of these artificial tanning booths or tanning salons. So that is a huge point of intervention. But the point is that although different, you know, in squamous cell carcinoma, it's more chronic sun exposure, and with melanoma, it's these short, intense bursts of sun exposure. But overexposure to ultraviolet radiation is definitely a huge factor in both the occurrence of non-melanoma skin cancer and in melanoma. So what I'm trying to teach patients is that they really need to get in the habit of wearing a sunscreen every single day, because we know, and there have been some really good studies lately, that starting now, so prospectively, looking at people in their adult years using sunscreen every day, they have less incidence of squamous cell carcinoma, of basal cell carcinoma, and also of melanoma going forward. So one message that is very important is that it's not too late. Too often people take the approach, oh, you know, the damage is already done. I got sunburns when I was a kid and I love to tan, so, you know, it's, the damage is done. That is definitely not true. Again, according to the Skin Cancer Foundation, only about 25% of our lifetime ultraviolet damage occurs by adulthood. So, you know, I try and counsel my patients that starting today, wearing daily sunscreen going forward will make a huge difference, both to cut down on their development of skin cancer and also to diminish signs of photoaging. some people have concerns about certain aspects of sunscreen, which I'll hope to address now and hopefully convince people that sunscreens are very safe and effective in protecting against photocarcinogenesis or skin cancer and photoaging. Number one, there were always some concerns about photostability. It is true that some sunscreen ingredients, when they're not photostabilized, do break down. Avobenzone, for example, does not remain active after exposure to the sun. But increasingly, there are lots of great products out there that offer photostabilized avobenzone, which actually is a great sunscreen. There are also other ingredients that block against the UVA spectrum, like eicampsul, oxybenzone, and I mentioned earlier the physical or inorganic filters like titanium dioxide and zinc oxide. And if you look for one of these ingredients, you can have a good feeling that you're getting adequate UVA protection in a photostabilized way, so meaning that the sunscreen won't break down. That being said, it's very important to reapply sunscreen. All too often I hear that people say, oh, I put sunscreen on in the morning and then I still manage to get tan or burned. But sunscreen does not stay active all day. So if someone is spending time outdoors, going to the beach or even just outside on a sunny day, they should reapply their sunscreen every 2 hours and even more frequently if they've been sweating or swimming. So it's very important to find a broad spectrum sunscreen that a patient is happy with, because of course that will encourage compliance. So they want a sunscreen that feels good on their skin, that doesn't leave them looking white and pasty, and that they will reapply at least every 2 hours. Some sunscreen ingredients now include antioxidants. We've known for some time how powerful antioxidants can be in neutralizing some of the damage from free radicals. We know that ultraviolet radiation can induce free radical formation in the skin, and it's these free radicals that can cause damage and wreak havoc by increasing metalloproteinases, breaking down collagen, breaking down elastin, and causing the formation of wrinkles, in addition to, of course, the DNA damaging mutations that lead to skin cancer. So antioxidants can be very effective to neutralize free radicals on the skin to try to prevent them from causing further damage. We know it's important to eat a healthy diet that's full of fruits and vegetables and get antioxidants naturally, but increasingly there are products that do offer great antioxidant properties by placing them directly on the skin, either at nighttime after a day of sun exposure, or importantly, coupling that with sunscreen and putting the antioxidant right in the sunscreen can actually sort of be a dual defense. You can actually protect yourself with the sunscreen and have the antioxidant there to quench the free radical at the same time. So that is a new and exciting part, and I see that in the future of sunscreens. Some other recent advancements in sunscreens include micronizing the particles, and I addressed this briefly earlier, but some of the concern with zinc oxide and titanium dioxide, which are the most effective physical or inorganic sunscreen ingredients, is the micronized versions. And what happens here is that people often associate zinc oxide with a lifeguard or with that telltale white, patchy, splotchy look on the skin. So more recently, there are micronized versions of zinc oxide and titanium dioxide, which makes them more cosmetically acceptable. And this is a good thing because this does increase compliance. And of course, if someone doesn't like the way the sunscreen makes their skin look, they're not going to use it. So something that's been done to increase compliance is very useful and very helpful. There have been multiple studies which have demonstrated that the nanoparticles in these micronized versions are safe. They do not penetrate the skin, and so there is no strong evidence of toxicity. So I do think that this is a good thing, and that this micronization of the physical titanium dioxide and zinc oxide blockers is a good thing because it can increase compliance. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has issued its long-awaited rules for sunscreen labeling, which had the goal of enabling consumers to more easily identify sunscreens that offer safe and effective protection from ultraviolet radiation. There certainly has been a lot of confusion among consumers because it seems like there are so many sunscreens out there, so many different ingredients that we're told to look for, and it seemed like a numbers game where the SPF number kept getting higher and higher. So there are some basic points that I think are important for the consumer to understand and also in regards to these new rulings by the FDA. usually people refer to SPF when they're talking about sunscreen. You know, what number should I use? And what people need to understand is that SPF, or sun protection factor, only refers to the ability of a sunscreen to block ultraviolet B rays. Those are the short rays, UVB rays. People can remember UVB for burn, because these are the short rays that cause sunburns. So really what SPF refers to is the ability of a sunscreen to prevent you from burning, or to minimize your chances of burning, to allow you to spend more time in the sun without burning your skin. Now, we know that the UVB rays are directly carcinogenic and definitely contribute to the formation of skin cancer. So it is certainly important to find a good sunscreen with at least an SPF of 15, which I'll get back to. What we focus on more recently is also the importance of UVA, or ultraviolet A rays. UVA rays are longer in wavelength, and therefore they have the ability to penetrate through clouds, to penetrate through windows, so car windows, office windows, and also they are present year-round. So even on a cloudy day, 70 to 80% of UVA rays reach the Earth's surface, and this is year-round. So we know now how important it is to protect one's skin using a broad-spectrum sunscreen, so one that protects against both UVB and UVA rays, and also to do this every single day. Because even when it's cloudy, even when it's raining, even when it's cold outside and the sun's not shining, those UVA rays are still penetrating your windows, penetrating the clouds, getting to your skin. And what the UVA rays do is they also contribute to photocarcinogenesis, or skin cancer, and they definitely contribute to the breakdown of collagen and elastin, leading to wrinkles and premature aging. So what the FDA has done is it's recognized the importance of a broad-spectrum protection on a daily basis, and what the sunscreens will have to do is meet certain requirements that they block UVB rays and have at least an SPF of 15 if they want to be able to say on their bottle that it helps to prevent skin cancer and early skin aging, and it has to block UVA. According to the new FDA labeling rules, sunscreens may be labeled broad spectrum if they provide protection against both UVA and UVB radiation according to the FDA test methods. And then only broad spectrum sunscreens with an SPF of 15 or higher may state that they help to prevent skin cancer and early skin aging. So this is really huge, because the FDA is now acknowledging how important it is to wear a daily broad-spectrum sunscreen, because we know of the great impact that, when used correctly, it can have on both the development of skin cancer and premature aging of the skin. The other important changes that will be coming are that the terms sunblock, sweatproof, and waterproof are no longer allowed on the sunscreen labels. So sunscreens can claim to be water resistant for up to 40 or up to 80 minutes of swimming or sweating based on standard testing. And the other thing that's been tossed around but has not come to fruition yet is they're thinking of putting a cap at SPF 50 plus, which is similar to what actually is happening in other parts of the world already. But we know that when used correctly, an SPF of 15 screens out about 93% of ultraviolet B rays, an SPF 30 screens about 97%, and an SPF 50 blocks about 98%, and above that, the difference is really minimal. So the idea is to not further confuse consumers, that it could be helpful to put a cap on an SPF 50 as the highest sunscreen available. Now, I will point out that all of these percentages that I just mentioned are directly contingent on the sunscreen being applied correctly, and there have been some great studies that are showing exactly what we've suspected. People are not using enough sunscreen to actually achieve the SPF that it says on their bottle. So that's another important point, that in order to achieve the SPF that you think you're getting, you have to use enough, which scientifically is 2 milligrams per square centimeter. But to make that more relevant to someone who doesn't know what 2 milligrams per square centimeter is, we usually say the equivalent of a shot glass full of lotion to cover all of the exposed areas, or about a tablespoon to cover the whole face and neck. So that's a lot of sunscreen, but people do need to use that to actually achieve what it says on the bottle. The last point that I want to cover is that the signs of premature aging can largely be prevented by using a broad-spectrum daily sunscreen. And so often people say, the damage is already done, why bother now? So I mentioned earlier some really good studies that using sunscreen daily, starting now in adulthood, going forward, can directly cut down the number of skin cancers you'll get. But there also have been good studies showing that the number of sunspots, the number of new moles, the number of fine lines and wrinkles can also be minimized by using a broad-spectrum sunscreen daily. So before I even start someone on a cosmetic regimen, the first thing I will do is make sure that they are committed to using a daily broad-spectrum sunscreen. I'll often tell them that, you know, they can spend all this money for me to improve their wrinkles or their sunspots, but unless they're going to commit to broad-spectrum sunscreen, they will continue to get this damage, and they'll just, you know, be spending more money, and this will be an endless cycle. So the best thing they can do for their skin and also to save money is using broad-spectrum sunscreen, because you definitely, you look at someone who hasn't spent time in the sun and they look 10 years younger than their twin sister who spends more time in the sun. So we know how powerful these UV rays are in aging the skin. People often come into my practice and ask me, what can I do to get rid of the damage? Like, I know that I was not so good when I was growing up, but I'm committed now to using broad-spectrum sunscreen and to protect myself and to stay in the shade and do all of the right things, but how can I get rid of some of the damage that I already have? Fortunately, there are several procedures now that can help to undo some of the signs of sun damage. There are some medical procedures like photodynamic therapy, which I do a huge amount in my practice to get rid of precancers. It also helps to treat some early skin cancers, and there have been some studies suggesting that photodynamic therapy also improves the cosmetic appearance of the skin. So it can help with providing a more even texture, cleaning up the complexion, improving the appearance of fine lines as well. So I do photodynamic therapy almost exclusively for medical reasons, for patients that have a lot of actinic keratoses, they have a history of several skin cancers, they want to do something to try to undo some of that damage and to clear up some of the precancerous lesions that they have now. So I will do photodynamic therapy often, but as an adjunct to that, I'll often do something like a non-ablative fractional resurfacing laser, which on the other end of the spectrum, I traditionally think of as a cosmetic treatment, which helps improve fine lines, uneven texture, uneven pigmentation, wrinkles, giving a smoother appearance to the skin. But there is some new data from some studies we've done at the Laser and Skin Surgery Center of New York showing that treatment with non-ablative fractional resurfacing can actually also get rid of some of those precancers and some of those actinic keratoses and the superficial damaged cells. So I think the two procedures are not mutually exclusive. I think of photodynamic therapy as getting rid of precancers, early skin cancers, more of a medical treatment that often is still covered by insurance. And of course, the fractional resurfacing lasers are cosmetic and not covered by insurance, but there is certainly a lot of overlap. And we're very optimistic because we're seeing that we can actually get rid of a lot of these precancerous changes, both from a medical and now a cosmetic level as well. So the popularity of these procedures has really taken off, and I think it's a good thing that people are definitely more aware of how damaging ultraviolet rays can be and the importance of finding a good broad-spectrum sunscreen that they can use on a daily basis.
Thank you, Dr. Hale, for your discussion of how regular sunscreen use can diminish the chances of developing future skin cancers and can slow the process of premature skin aging. For more information, read Dr. Hale's article from the May 2012 issue of Cosmetic Dermatology here on cosderm.com.